This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
I just think before I go to my next guest and Dr. Sibonakuhle Ndlovu, of course, we're going to be talking about people who are othery, you don't generally want to use disabled. You just want to talk about people who are generally just different from the way, you know, normal people would behave or perform in life. And I do want to ask the doctor what the terminology the doctor would prefer to be used. I always do that, in essence, before I just jump in and I talk about people who are, of course, disabled in life. And then you find out that the terminology that somebody wants to be engaging on is something differently abled or otherwise. And I just want to check with the doctor what the doctor's terminology is that they would be using. It's 24 minutes to the top of the hour, and I just want to play you that last voice note before I go to Dr. Sibonakuhle Ndlovu, and we'll engage that particular conversation in a second.
Hi, Denzel. My name is Justice. I'm from Tembisa. You see the interview you're having with the Jensen Studio. It's not PR. And it has turned into PR. You know that this interview you can listen to when you interview an artist with this one, it's a PR interview. How the artist are answering the question, you can tell this is PR. But the one you're having right now, I was afraid. I'm pure song, but right now, is born and truly mentors, need to papa m cow, I'm so divine. I love it by shine back people may see. I don't know. I shout out to you, Denzel. Shout out to the gents. I didn't know these gents existed until now. And I'm going to follow them. I'm going to buy their music. This is worth it.
23 minutes to the top of the hour, I did say Dr. Sibonakuhle is with me, and I just want to check also on the terminology. And while that particular voice note was playing, Sicelo also gives me a different term, especially abled. And you know what? The terminology is as what, of course, someone does want to refer to themselves as, particularly people too, when you talk about, you know, partially sighted individuals, and or, you know, when you engage those particular conversations and then somebody suggests that they don't like the terminology of being blind, they like a different terminology, in essence, to, you know, to of course, the disability that they have. Let me bring the doctor into the conversation. Dr. Sibonakuhle Ndlovu, welcome to Power 98.7. Welcome to Power Perspective. It's a privilege to have you on, and good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm really, really good. Doctor, just checking on the terminology, you know, Sicelo here would go with specially abled. Some people go with differently abled. The terminology sometimes is you know, within textbooks and research and whatever, what would be disabled. What's the terminology you would go with or prefer to use in a conversation where we do engage issues of various disabilities, in essence?
Okay, thank you so much for that question. Really, terminology is very important when we talk about disabilities.
Absolutely.
I prefer that when we talk about disabilities, we refer to the term persons with disabilities. Mm. Persons with disabilities. Why we say persons, why I would prefer persons with disabilities, because is a person first before we see the disability. Is a person like all other people, but is living with a disability. So I would prefer that we use the term persons with disabilities, meaning that is a person, we see the person first before we see a disability.
Would you, in essence, sometimes, doctor, include the terminology living? You know, there's persons with disabilities, but would you, in essence, sometimes prefer to use the terminology of persons living with disabilities as well, or, you know, is it interactive? The one doesn't really matter whether you use the one or the other. Persons with disabilities, persons living with disabilities. Is there a preference in that particular aspect as well?
Yeah, as I have said, I would prefer the term
persons with disabilities.
Persons with disabilities, not living with disabilities, because yeah. It's like disability can be permanent. It can also be temporal. But when we say living with disability, we're already implying that this person has a disability the whole of his life.
Absolutely.
Let's take, for example, a condition like a healthy issue, a well-being issue. After and some intervention, that person could maybe recover.
Mm.
So if you say the person lives with a disability, like the person will never recover. But sometimes there are disabilities that are temporal, that with an intervention, they can be overcome. But when you've already said that living with a disability, you are saying that person has to live with disability the whole of life, which is not true.
Mm. And doctor, do you find that, you know, when you're at the University of Johannesburg, as you are senior postdoctoral research fellow at the University of Johannesburg, and when you do either have colleagues and or when there are articles or research being done, do you find that there is an engagement around the terminology of persons with disabilities before someone begins to, you know, just begin to hit the typewriter and begin to write and produce either documents or whatever they produce? Do you find that generally people begin to engage around the terminology with people like yourself and other people, persons with disabilities, that people engage and suggest and ask, you know, what is the terminology that is preferred? Or do you find that in instances where, you know, research is done and or various documents are produced, and then it's just how many academics or how many people with disabilities, and then the insensitivity maybe to the subject matter, or that insensitivity, you know, takes away from maybe the thoroughness or the depth or the seriousness of the topic that is at hand sometimes. Do you find that there's enough consultation sometimes around the terminology that needs to be used?
Yes, really, there is need for that consultation to be made.
But do you find that it's enough, and do you find that it happens?
It happens, but sometimes people take it for granted, and somebody would just say disabled people. It's only after you've asked, why are you using that terminology, that the person will begin to explain. But otherwise, the consultation is not wide enough. You just find some would say persons with disabilities, some would say persons living with the disabilities, some would say disabled persons, without giving the reasons why they are referring to those terms in the way they are referring them to.
Yeah. Doctor, let's have let's start the conversation here, because the conversation in essence is and personalized around someone like yourself who is a person with a disability. Do you want to, at the beginning of the interview, just share, you know, what that, you know, disability would be, that we have an understanding of maybe the narrative and the perspective from which you then will engage the conversation, whereby we're going to be talking about academia and students at university, but, you know, more than so, the academia process of academics at universities, and, you know, how people are engaging that space of persons with disabilities at universities. Would you just at the beginning like to share with us the disability that you would share, in essence, so that we can connect with the terminology and the sort of discussion you're going to have?
Okay, let me correct you.
Okay.
I am not a person with disabilities myself, but I have some research interest in
Okay.
persons with disability. I do not
I was.
have a disability myself or any impairment.
Okay, I was led to believe that you felt so passionate about it because you were a person with a disability. I apologize in that particular instance, doctor, but of
Oh,
course.
thank you so much. I know I'm not,
Okay.
I do not have any impairment myself. I'm just interested in persons with disabilities looking at the challenges they are confronting. It's an area of study that
Yeah.
I've from my all my education, undergraduate, honors, masters, and
Yeah.
PhD, I've looked at that particular area because I found out that is an area that is
Yeah.
so much under-researched, especially in higher education.
Did you let me throw a stat at you, doctor? Did you know that government data suggests that 22.4% of people aged 15 or older have some form of function difficulty, whether it be sight, hearing, mobility, or cognitive? I found that to be extremely interesting. That is the percentage actually of and that's government data that suggests that 22.4% of people aged 15 and older have some form of function difficulty. I didn't know that the number was that high.
Yes, but it could be even higher because there are some invisible disabilities that are
Absolutely.
not, yes, that are not recorded, that are not known. For example, if the person doesn't declare that he has a disability, somebody would never know that this person has a disability that is invisible. For example, hearing impairment.
Yeah.
As you look at somebody sitting there, you'll never know that this person has a hearing loss
Yeah.
unless and until he declares. So the percentage could be even higher than the 24% because some disabilities you cannot really see them on a human being unless and until he tells you that I have this disability. Those that we refer to as invisible disabilities.
Let me go to the middle of the interview, doctor, immediately then. I would have started somewhere else, but let me just deal with that declaring the disability in essence, where a person with a disability declares. And as you've raised it, somebody who might not declare it, you might not know, for example, in hearing. And whilst I was preparing for this particular interview, I did come across that particular aspect where some individuals would rather not declare that they have or that they are a person with a disability because they might find themselves, disadvantaged or somewhat, taken advantage of, or that their promotional aspects might be challenged or whatever, whatever, whatever. Do you find that? And like I said, I'm just going to jump to the middle of the interview and I'll come back to the beginning, that in some instances there are people who choose not to declare that they are a person with a disability, their disabilities, because it might disadvantage them in various spaces of society, whether it be in the work front or other. Do you find that?
Yes. It happens a lot, especially with the students with disabilities. Maybe when they are coming into an institution of higher education for the first time, they want to belong. They would want to belong, so they would not declare that they have a disability, especially if it's an invisible one, because they fear for being stigmatized, with disabilities. With disabilities, it's a concept that is not yet understood by a society at large. Those people are seen as people who are incapable, who are helpless, who needs help. So that those people, they know that that's how people are conceptualized disability. So they would hide that they have a disability in fear of being isolated, stigmatized and ostracized by other fellow students or even other academics in higher education, for the reason that it's a concept that has a lot of myths around it, misconceptualization around it.
Sure. And I suppose, as you said, you talk about stigma, bias. Bias would also be one of those things. Let me ask you this. Do you find, Doctor, that I see in all of the spaces where you've worked and the kind of research that you've done, it does deal with either, you know, students at universities and academia, but also academics in essence in the space of universities and higher learning and the likes? Do you find that very little research is conducted about academics with disabilities and persons with disabilities in academia in South African universities? Or do you find that if that is the case, that it's a worldwide instance and that very little research is conducted on a global scale, actually? Or is it that, you know, we are, as South Africa, not just engaging this kind of research, you know, as much as we should?
Okay, thank you so much for that. Really, when I go out with doing research on disability, I found that our literature is very, very limited in South African higher education, but in other countries in the global north, like in UK, in America, they do really engage with academics with disabilities. And I was wondering why, in the South African context, there is so much legal research around academics with disabilities. Yes, there is a vast amount of literature around students with disabilities. But as I read, as I do my research, I've realized that there is very, very literature around academics with disabilities. They are invisible. They are not known. But it's not that they are not there, because as a student who was interested in issues of disability, as I was in different universities doing my studies, I actually saw them. I saw them. I interacted with them. Some they really taught me, but in terms of literature, there is very, very little literature on academics with disabilities, making it as if they do not exist while they are there.
So there's that particular irony then that you've just pointed out, because it's also something I picked up. Universities, you know, do have an inclusive policy. And like you say, it's not that they're not known. Some of them are known. It's just that they're invisible in instances. This particular, you know, research is invisible. It's almost an irony in the sense of, like you say, they are there. There is an inclusivity in that particular space. I'm not quite sure whether inclusivity actually means that there's accommodation, you know, that is also then comes with that inclusivity to talk to people with disabilities. But let's just start with the irony that I then, you know, immediately pick up, that suggests that yes, people living with or people with disabilities are in the institutions, and yet little is known about them, or little is written about them, or little is researched about them. Why do you find that's the case, particularly in South Africa, as you point out, that in the rest of the world, in their universities, this kind of research does exist?
Yes. It's the conversation that I wanted to start, so that We find out why there is such little research on academics with disabilities in institutions of higher education.
It's a conversation that I want to
engage with. For example, when I wrote my article that on academics with disabilities, I actually said that it based on the challenges that are faced by students with disabilities, which I assumed that they are the same challenges that are confronted by academics with disabilities, but we still have to do empirical research. Empirical research where we go from one institution to another, trying to find maybe even the number of academics with disabilities that are there, and actually interviewing them on the challenges they are facing. Presently, we base our research on students who have disabilities, that if they face these challenges, those could be the same challenges that are confronted by academics with disabilities. But still, we have to go out now to do the empirical research with academics with disabilities themselves.
So I'm in answering that question. Why? I suppose that we wouldn't have some form of understanding of how many academics are persons actually with disabilities at our universities across the country. We would actually not have a number. In essence, we would not have a percentage then. I with all the research that's being done around students and students with disabilities, I found a figure, and maybe you can correct it for me. I found a figure that says students with disabilities enrolled in South African institutions of higher education make up less than 1% of the student population. And maybe your research or you know otherwise, but you know, is there any sense of guidance that begins to tell us, you know, what kind of picture we're looking at around academics with disabilities in our institutions?
Of course, yes. Yeah. That should be the starting point.
Yeah.
How many are they? And from the assumption that persons with disabilities meet with a lot of challenges accessing higher education. The implication is that even if they are there, there should be a very little percentage who have managed to overcome the challenges that are met by persons with disabilities.
Yeah.
In a way that they have that qualification of being academics in higher education. For the fact that persons with disabilities meet with a lot of challenges that hinder them in terms of attaining to the level of being an academic, I would assume that even when they are there, they should be very few.
Yeah.
But even then, we must know how many they are so that we speak to them, we interview them, we find out the challenges they are confronting so that there could be some intervention by the universities themselves, there could be intervention by the government, there could be intervention by the organization of persons with disabilities.
So from what you've just told me, Doctor, I would then having a sense of underrepresentation and underrepresented. Would that be a correct takeaway from what you've just said, that there's massive underrepresentation then of people with disabilities, and we can get to the barriers to, you know, accessibility and the disability inclusion and all of those particular aspects, but totally underrepresented because of those barriers?
Yeah, that's very true. There is quite a lot of underrepresentation of persons with disabilities in every space.
Sure. Let me ask you, Doctor, about, you know, policy in essence. And I want to differentiate between what is policy in government, for example, or in higher education, and then policy sometimes where institutional or institutions have their own disability policies around persons with disabilities. But let me deal with that after the news, Doctor. My guest is Dr. Sibonokuhle Ndlovu, Senior Postdoctoral Research Fellow at the University of Johannesburg. We're talking in instances of some research that's been done around academia and academics in these higher learning institutions, universities, and as such, and then also about, of course, students in these institutions as well. But the focus more about, of course, academics and why there's been such very little research done into this particular field. But let me bring the doctor back into the conversation. Doctor, let's just, before I go to the questions, I wanted to ask you about the policy and the differentiation in policy, where I wanted to talk about disability in higher education and then the policies then, and also in some institutions where they have their own disability policies, and why they need to, or feel the need to have their own disability policies, in essence, to what maybe could be guided through from a national instance. But let me just find out what some of your takeaways, what some of your research, what some of your data produced in the kind of research that you have done around academics in one particular instance. Let's leave the students out of it a little bit. A lot of research has been done there, but just give us some insight into some of the findings and data around academics living with, or rather academics with disabilities, and people with, persons with disabilities, in essence, at these institutions.
Okay, I didn't get the question well. Please, can you repeat your question?
Sure. I wanted to ask you, with all the research that you've done around academics in these institutions, and then, of course, academics with disabilities, what would be some of the big takeaways of that research that you would have done? What is some of the main pointers that the data points to, in essence?
Okay. As I said before, that there is currently limited empirical research that has been done on academics with disabilities.
Yeah.
My research has just assumed that they confront the same challenges that are confronted by students with disabilities. Students with disabilities confront challenges of infrastructure, which is still inaccessible. Yes, of course, we appreciate that a lot has been done. Some renovations have been done. Some retrofittings of old buildings have been done, with lifts that now in some other institutions have some voices for those that have some visual loss when they are using the lifts now. Lifts with the voices have been installed in some universities, but there's still inadequate infrastructure that is accessible to all disability categories. For example, those with physical disabilities, they still confront mobility challenges where they are, of course, I want to appreciate that a lot has been done, because there are some rails and ramps, but they are behind the buildings that it takes long for those students with disabilities to negotiate their way to the lecture rooms, which I think is the same challenges that if they are academics with disabilities, they would also confront the challenges of infrastructure, in which case, if they are facing those challenges, they may, like students with disabilities, get to lecture rooms late than other lecturers who do not have the challenge, the mobility challenges.
Sure.
So my barriers, the barriers that I'm looking at, I look at it from the perspective that those barriers are faced by students with disabilities, of which research has been done. But now we have to move ahead to also conduct empirical studies where we have to hear it from the academics with disabilities themselves. We still have to conduct a lot of research with academics with disabilities, not work from the assumption that they face the challenges that students with disabilities face. They could not be facing the same challenges. We mustn't work from the assumptions. But presently, because there is no literature on academics with disabilities, we just assume that we know that they might be experiencing the same challenges that are being experienced by students with disabilities.
So on a scale of progressiveness, Doctor, you're suggesting that institution responsibility is there, that there is institution responsibility in these entities in essence. It's just that, you know, sometimes it's not well thought out. But institution responsibility, they are taking cognizance of.
Yeah. Sure. Really some efforts. We need to appreciate the efforts that have been done. It's not enough, of course, but really some institutions, the government has been so responsive to also include, I would say, persons with disabilities, which include both students and academics with disabilities.
Sure. Just the question then that I'm going back to of national policy related to disabilities in higher education. The last time I checked, it was adopted recently as 2018. And then also I'm aware that some universities, like I said earlier before the news, have their own institutional disability policies. Do you find that there are gaps in those particular instances? The policies exist and there is institution responsibility. Do you think that the policies, you know, cover all the aspects of, you know, the responsibilities that need to be taken into account with persons with disabilities, or do you find there are gaps in policy?
Yes, especially the post-school education and training policy of 2018.
Sure.
Yeah, it does have the gaps because, you know, with the persons with disabilities, the disabilities, they come in categories.
Yeah.
We talk of the category of visual loss, we talk of the category of physical disabilities, we talk of category of hearing impairment. But in the policy, those categories are not disaggregated. The policy just refers to persons with disabilities, meaning that they are just grouping them together as persons with disabilities. Yeah. They are not putting them in their different categories. In that respect, it means that the needs are different because the categories are different, but the police just caters and refers to them as persons with disabilities as if they have the same needs. They have the same they have the same needs. That clustering and not disaggregating the categories means that even if the institutions would love to intervene, to provide interventions, but they may not get the needs according to their categories because policy does not put those disabilities in categories. It just homogenizes disability as if the needs are the same.
Sure. I've got Alina in Soshanguve on the line, but I just need to close this particular point with you, and I'll take Alina in a second. Would it then help when you speak of infrastructure and you talk about policy, specifically that 2018 policy, as you've also pointed out, suggesting that it doesn't consider categories of the different disabilities. It looks at people with disabilities as if they all have the same challenges, in essence, what you're saying. Would it help if there was a principle where infrastructure was concerned and where, you know, policy was concerned and where, you know, conversations and discussions were then happening to get to a principle of universal design at our institutions, where particularly infrastructure then would be considered, so that you wouldn't have these particular problems if you thought about it from the word go, in essence, the principle of universal design?
Yes, universal design, especially in terms of infrastructure, is the way that can assist, because universal design means that the needs, the mobility needs, not only of persons with disabilities, but the mobility needs of everyone.
Yeah.
So by virtue of thinking about the challenges that could be faced even before constructing buildings is the way to go. Because when universal designs, universal design principles are applied, it means the buildings that would be built would consider all diversity. And that means even those with disabilities would be included. And that's what we are proposing, that as institutions construct their new buildings, then they should apply the principles of universal design.
Got you. Doctor, I'm going to bring Alina into the conversation. Alina in Soshanguve. Alina?
Good evening, Dangle. How are you?
I'm very good, Alina. And how are you?
I'm good. I'm glad for you to bring us the doctor here to clarify some of the matters concerning persons with disability.
Sure.
Actually, I'm a person with disability myself.
Okay.
I'm blind.
Yeah.
I'm totally blind. So, like, I like the way he defines, like, the way he prefers how persons with disabilities are called. Because actually I have my two friends, my two friends, the other one is blind like me, and the other one is from mainstream. She doesn't have any disability.
Yeah.
And then one day it happened that they were fighting. And this one with the one who is not the person with a disability, she came to me, she says, Alina, you know what? I will beat so this one, because firstly she is blind. Then I said, how? So when you look at this person, actually you at first you don't see a person. You just see blindness.
Yeah.
Then how do you come to me and tell me you will beat her, because I feel like you don't see her as a person actually. And then how do you take me, because me and her actually are the same. So I didn't like that. It's like other people don't consider us as persons. Like in front of their eyes, what they see is just blindness. So I like that definition.
Sure. And the definition is persons with disabilities.
Yeah, that is correct.
Got you.
At first, I'm a person.
Yeah.
Then you can consider my disability after.
Got you. And I think that's important, as the doctor pointed out as well.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Then secondly, I like to agree with her when she says that the challenges of students at institutions of higher education is the infrastructure.
Yeah.
My reason is that, you know, for that person to be there, it means she or he is able, or he is able to learn and understand. So you cannot say that because she's failing or he is failing at that institution, it's because she or he is the person with disability.
Yeah.
There might be other things that make that person fail. For example, maybe the person gets the venue of education late, so she can't or he can't get some materials because of the way or the roots or the failure she or he faces in getting there. So I think the doctor, actually she actually made a good point there.
And Alina, even I think the point you're also making is it doesn't stop once you've got there. Once you've got there, it's only the start, because then there's the whole infrastructure of finding your place within that particular lecture, finding the fact that, you know, the lecturer needs to engage you as well and not just assume that everybody can see what they are doing. And then also the sort of literature that's been made available needs to be also made available so that you would understand it and can engage it as well. And so the problem, I suppose, you know, only starts once you pointed out to us, once you get there, the problems also then just, you know, just accumulate after that as well, because you've got to be considered in all of those spaces.
Yeah, exactly.
Alina, thank you so much for such an important call.
Thank you so much, Denzel. And the doctor there, I like people like her. I think they should invite her in many awarenesses of persons with disabilities.
Alina, would you like to ask her a question, Alina, or just say something to her? You can chat to her. I've made it available so that you can say something to her.
I just like to thank her if she can hear me. Thank you very much, Doctor.
Doctor, can you hear her?
Yes, I can hear her. Thank you so much.
Would you like?
Thank you so much.
I was going to ask, would you like to say something to Alina? She can chat to you at the moment.
Yes, I would want to say that Alina, is she a student? Is she a student at one institution of higher education?
Yes, I was once a student of University of Limpopo. Yes.
Hmm. Okay. All I want to say is this. The slogan that we have, that nothing for us without us.
Yes,
students or academics with disabilities must be engaged in this conversation whereby they express themselves, really. Whatever is being done, they mustn't be left out. When policies are being discussed, maybe institutional disability policies in institutions of higher education, let those conversations involve the people with disabilities, because they have a lived experiences. It's them who know exactly what they need. It's them who know why they need that. It's them who know how those interventions should be structured in order to suit their needs. Mm. But it happens that you find those without disabilities speaking on their behalf, making decisions on their behalf without including them. Where it concerns disability, persons with disabilities must be involved and not left out.
Yeah. Alina, well, thank you very much, Doctor.
And Alina, thank you so much for making the call. Such an important call.
Thank you.
Doctor, just let me just move to something that I suppose would also be impacted, and maybe you can speak to it, and maybe it doesn't come up in the research, because like you said, you know, very little research is done, and there are a lot of takeaways from actually then assumptions that if learners are going through this, academics would also be going through this. Career trajectories within these institutions. And I can only think that would also be, you know, something that would limit and be a barrier, and that we're not seeing these career trajectories where it comes to, you know, academics and persons with disabilities within these institutions, because, you know, in essence, sometimes within the HR components and or, you know, the panels that are, you know, deciding on some of these career, you know, movements, you wouldn't necessarily find a person with a disability there sitting amongst them and making the kind of choices as well. Career trajectories, I would assume, would also be impacted.
Yes. As long as they do not engage, do not involve persons with disabilities, they would be negatively impacted, because those without disabilities would be speaking on their behalf. Yeah. Let those people be involved in those platforms so that they can just be able to have their voice out and their voice to be heard. Mm. So their voice, they are voiceless now, because presently we don't even know how many there are in institutions of higher education, what challenges they are experiencing. So obviously, with in terms of career movements, there is limitations. They are not represented, their voice is not heard, they are not speaking out, even if they are. The few who are there, they are there. We must take into consideration that the fact is that they are there. What is missing is research. What is missing is their voice. What is missing is them speaking out on the challenges they are confronting.
Doctor, before I let you go, you know, maybe just share with us, apart from infrastructural, you know, issues, share with us what you think institutions and or, you know, as a country and or policy needs to, you know, project to be at the forefront of progressive social change around all of the kind of conversations we're having. What are the kind of, you know, movements and or core issues that we need to deal with so that we are at the forefront of progressive social change, in essence, where when we are talking with people, talking of the issue of people with disabilities, that we are not left behind, in essence, and that we progressively moving as well, and that, you know, we take on our responsibility in that regard. What would you suggest, as we close the interview, that we do to be at the forefront of progressive social change?
Okay. The responsibility is on the institutions themselves, because they have made effort, which we appreciate so much, of also including persons with disabilities. But they must really engage with them, the involvement in policy. When policies are formulated in institutions, institutional disability policies, the committees, maybe the transformation committees in institutions, must make sure those persons, either the students or the academics, they are not left outside the policies. This slogan that nothing without us, for us, nothing for us without us, must really be implemented in institutions of higher education. The government, policymakers as well, they mustn't formulate and design policies without consultation, wide consultation with persons with disabilities themselves, either the students or the academics with disabilities. The voice, the representative representation must be equity. Issues of equity and equality should really be considered on serious levels. If both students with disabilities and academics with disabilities should be included, let their voice be heard first. Let them hear from them. Let's not speak for them. Let their voice be heard. It should start by research to identify the percentage of academics, especially academics, because it's where there is limited research. Let research start from identifying them and making them visible. When they are visible, then we start engagements with them, which will allow them the voice, for their voice to be heard, for their challenges to be heard. Then it should start from there. We'll take it from there. But for now, it's difficult because they are invisible. Their numbers in institutions of higher education are not known. Let's start from identifying them first.
Sure.
Yes.
You know, Dr. Sibonokuhle Ndlovu, you remind me of when I used to be at school, and there used to be an institution called SACOS, South African Council of Sport, and we had a slogan that went like this: it was "No normal sport in an abnormal society," and of course it reminds me of the kind of slogan that you're talking about now, where persons with disabilities are concerned as well. And that was the old slogan we had: "No normal sport in an abnormal society." Dr. Sibonokuhle Ndlovu, thank you so much for coming on to Power Perspective. I'm losing my tongue in this late evening, and I can feel it. But also I'm going to let you go get some sleep, Doctor. But I'm going to say thank you so much for coming on to Power Perspective this evening, and thank you so much for coming on to the show. It's much, much appreciated. And I think your views also and the research and the insight into the research you've given us is much, much appreciated as well. And also, we really appreciate the fact that you've come onto Power Perspective and given us some clarity on a lot of the issues. Thank you so much, Doctor.
Okay, thank you so much. Good night.
Good night. Of course, Dr. Sibonokuhle Ndlovu there is, of course, a senior postdoctoral research fellow at the University of Johannesburg.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.